Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
So, Jake, one of the concerns, or I don't know, concerns a word, but talking points coming into tonight's SmackDown was whether Roman could get the spotlight shifted back onto his match against Cody after Cody's been, talked about Rock on Monday and Rock talked about Cody last Friday. And we had the setup of Heyman and Reigns promising to come alone. And then it turns out they didn't. And then it turns out Cody figured they wouldn't. So he had Seth and Jay on standby. And we ended up with a stare down Cody in the ring flanked by Jay and Seth opposite of Roman Solo, Jimmy and Heyman. And that's how the show ended. Not a lot of fireworks, but some, I think some good dialogue with, you know, Cody, you're at number two. You'll be number two as long as I'm around. You'll always be number two. You're a good number two, but I'm number one. And Cody kind of firing back with a plan, words saying at WrestleMania, you know, after your long title reign, it's going to end. I'm going to be the one playing off of that. Did all that work for you? Did it live up to a final segment for SmackDown? Kind of get people ideally shifted back into thinking about the match that's going to end night two of WrestleMania? Or is there still kind of a cloud of Rock hanging around? Because Cody brought up, can you trust the Rock? After Reigns said, can you trust Seth? And it still feels like there's a lot of other moving parts. What'd you think?
I enjoyed the final segment. I can't say that I left it completely satisfied. I think I was hoping for a new wrinkle in the psychology, but it feels like they're sort of traveling down a worn path at this point. You know, you have Cody talking about, you know, being essentially the chosen one who's going to unseat Roman from his long title reign. You have Roman talking about him, you know, being a number two while he's a number one. They rehash a bunch of Rhodes and, you know, Anoa'i family related drama. And that's kind of really all we got. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of new ground to be tread here. I mean, I guess the open questions are whether or not either of them can trust their tag partners on night one. But I didn't think this did a whole lot to add anything to the stakes for night two or introduced any new pieces to the puzzle that you were trying to figure out. So well-delivered promo. You know, these guys have good chemistry together verbally. They always have, you know, ever since they've been together in the ring. I just kind of felt like they, you know, they went out there and kind of rehashed some old material. It's not necessarily bad. It certainly had the crowd's attention, but it wasn't cutting edge by any stretch, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's how I felt. Like, it was good. Like, it was good. But, you know, people are thinking, oh, there's going to be some big twist. You know, Heyman kind of hinted at something, and you know, people try to read into whatever his wording was. And it just turns out, well, Roman couldn't be trusted, and Cody didn't trust Roman. It's like, wait a second. It wasn't like this big twist. It was nice. I mean, it was fine. It just wasn't like a super conversation sparking segment. Now that said, WrestleMania is still a ways off. They still got, you know, time to heat things up. And this was meant to kind of pull some people in. You know, there's NCAA, people are thinking about the men's basketball tournament, and, you know, there's a lot going on, and they don't want to peak too early. And so to me, this was just, you know, kind of a primer before the paint. It laid the foundation. It allowed Cody and Roman to have some one-on-one time. Talk about some background, and it was good. It wasn't boiling. It wasn't simmering. It was somewhere in between. I liked the segment. It just didn't necessarily deliver any kind of big punch at the end. It was just, Cody didn't trust Roman after all, and he was right. But if we kind of step beyond what actually like happened in terms of big, broad headline brushstrokes, the notion of, can Cody trust Seth isn't a question WWE is going to have brought up on television. if they don't want people wondering. And then they also brought up, can you trust The Rock, which is, you know, something that obviously people are thinking about, but it hasn't really been acknowledged overtly by WWE. You know, Rock's coming out to his own entrance, kind of standing on a separate side of the ring. Obviously, Rock and Roman were going to wrestle, and then there was a twist, and, you know, Roman's wearing the Family First hoodie, and Rock, you know, sided with Roman because of taking exception to, you know, Cody and some kind of stretch in thinking Cody was disrespecting family. But that aside, that was Rock's interpretation of it. And so they threw those two things out there, and now more WWE viewers are going to be thinking about that, talking about it with their friends or in social media. What do you make of that as a hook going into the tag match, which clearly is what they're getting at? Is does Seth turn on Cody in that tag match, the biggest tag match in WrestleMania history, as it was phrased tonight? Does Seth cost Cody his chance to have a bloodline-free ringside because Seth is the one who wants to take the title from Roman? Or does Rock turn on Roman because, you know, or maybe it's not a turn, but he does something so that Roman has to be alone, and Rock can even frame it as, hey, I just want to see if you can win without help. Both of those scenarios are in play more so after this segment. And so I think they put something out there more overtly than kind of subtly as an undercurrent as a discussion point now that I think next week on Raw and SmackDown, the announcers and other wrestlers will lean into. That's kind of my take on what the purpose of this was.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. The planting of the seeds of distrust on both sides of the coin is probably the smart way to go about it. You don't want either Cody or Roman to feel like they're too comfortable heading into that night one tag match about what the outcome is going to be. I don't think you introduce a stipulation like bloodline rules unless you plan on delivering it. And so I think, you know, you have to book your way there, you know, create some plausible pathways for Cody to be betrayed on night one, you know, Seth being, you know, an aspect of that, you know, other bloodline involvement in the tag match could be a part of that too. So there's a lot of, you know, sort of things they're juggling in the air right now to keep people guessing about, you know, what that outcome on night one is going to be. And then of course, you know, who else could possibly be involved on night two once you're in that bloodline rules scenario where anything goes. You know, there's a lot of directions that they can go with that and hopefully still wind up delivering a, you know, a satisfying conclusion. So I think as far as being a chapter in a story, I think this was, you know, kind of mission accomplished. If you were looking for something really special and unique, because this is the first time we've seen Roman and Cody in the ring together, you know, by themselves in an adversarial situation in quite a while, I don't know that it was like a complete home run, but it was, you know, a solid double. I think you'd call it that fairly.
Yeah. I think it was an important and well-paced chapter in building up two matches simultaneously and setting the table for whatever's going to happen afterwards. It's sort of in the eye of the beholder, whether you wanted to see some blockbuster debut or some bloody beatdown or something like that. And I just don't think this was the time for it. So I was satisfied, you know, with this segment, but I also just sort of tempered enthusiasm in that did it end up having the crescendo that I think a lot of people might have been, you know, hoping for, banking on, expecting, however you want to phrase it. All right, well, we got a lot more to talk about. We will pause and formally introduce ourselves in the show, and then we'll get to calls and emails and more topics. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, March 22nd, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com with daily news updates, live TV and pay-per-view and PLA coverage, special features from a variety of writers, some fun flashback articles, polls, and more. Hope you're checking it out every day, pwtorch.com. And I also host Friday a podcast. Earlier this week, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joined me on the flagship, and we talked for a couple hours, first hour about AEW, second hour about WWE, roughly. And that is available right now if you didn't hear it yet. Just search Wade Keller in your podcast app, and you'll see my logo, my face show up on our logo, and there'll be a blue one and a red logo. You can subscribe to both. The red logo is our post shows, which you can stream live, but also download on that red show feed after the fact, just like a podcast. And then our blue logo show is our main podcast with some other interviews and pay-per-view preview shows and flashbacks. Both are free. Search Wade Keller and subscribe. And while you're at it, search PW Torch and subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast feed. That includes a different show each day of the week with different hosts and a different theme. And also, you'll see a charcoal-colored PW Torch VIP logo pop up. You can subscribe to that for free. It includes some samples of our VIP podcasts. And you can also subscribe to our full VIP lineup within that app on the native Apple Podcast app using your Apple account. That's one way to go VIP. You can find out more details on going VIP with Patreon, which gives you Spotify access, by the way, or through our main website, which gives you access to our full 35-year library of podcasts, retro radio shows, newsletters, articles, and more. All the details, all the options, all the pricing tiers at pwtorch.com/govip. One perk with any of the memberships, no matter how you sign up, is that you get these shows, the free ones, the Daily Cast and the Wade Keller shows, with a streamlined version of them with the ad breaks and in-house ads edited out. So that's just one perk, but many more perks come with the various options. So speaking of ProWrestling.net and Jason Powell, his colleague over at ProWrestling.net, Jake Barnett, is the other voice you've heard so far on the show discussing SmackDown. Jake Barnett, welcome back to the co-host chair. It's been a little longer gap, I think, than usual, but it's great to have you back.
Thanks, Wade. Always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so you covered SmackDown tonight over at ProWrestling.net, so people listening can read your report, read your analysis, and then kind of compare it to what I had to say about the show at pwtorch.com. Alex McDonald also writes reports on SmackDown on Friday night, so we have a couple. There's a variety of perspectives you can get. It's kind of fun. I know a lot of you are on social media during SmackDown when you watch, but consider opening your phone browser, your laptop tab, and checking out our reports too. They're a little more thorough, and maybe there's a little less noise out there too, so you can make that part of your routine. Jake, tell people what else you do for ProWrestling.net, and how they can hear and read more of you.
Yeah, you mentioned it. I do the SmackDown reports on Friday nights. I also do an audio review of the show for members that usually goes up late Friday or early Saturday. I also join Jason Powell weekly for the .NET Weekly Audio Show, which is the flagship show for .NET for members. And I also join him for pay-per-view audio reviews for AEW and WWE shows. So you can catch all that stuff over at ProWrestling.net, and a lot of the audio shows are going to be members only, so if you're interested in membership, that's you can find all the information for that at pwmembership.net.
Excellent. All right, well, you are invited to call us if you're live streaming our show. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, please push 1. That'll flag you on our switchboard. If you want to be on the show, we'll know. If you just want to call and listen in and decide later if you want to join the conversation, that is also fine. You can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. You can find the live streams following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and sometimes Collision at wadekellerpostshow.com. You can also find a link directly to our live stream that starts about 5 minutes after the TV shows end, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and some Saturdays, at the top and bottom of my TV reports at pwtorch.com. That also reminds you of the phone number and email. So lots of ways to find us, and if it's convenient for you, if you're watching the shows live and you have time to listen to the post show live, that's a way to do it. Of course, most of you just download the show and listen later on when it works for your schedule, and that works for us too. All right, let's go to our first call of the day here. We'll go to Steve in Cleveland. Steve, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Good evening, gentlemen. I thought it was a good SmackDown show. I wouldn't say great. I tended to agree with Jake that it was like a double in the gap, certainly not a home run at the end. I mean, I tend to think it's nice when they have a slow simmer versus just let's start throwing punches and have violence all the way up to the big show. But it's taken its sweet time, and at least that was an enjoyable facet of it as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, Jake, you want to add anything to that or respond?
No, I think that's, I think we're on the same page there. There's, yeah. You know, there's, you're not going to have every segment swing for the fences. And, you know, maybe up against the NCAA tournament, they thought, well, we don't want to give too much away because we're not going to have maybe the biggest audience, you know, compared to other weeks. And so they, you know, they kind of kept it a little bit lower key than some might have expected based on the, you know, the segment between Cody and Heyman on Raw. But that said, you know, it's one of those situations where it's like you're kind of always hoping for a little bit more, right? You know, you're thinking, well, maybe they're another a step ahead of me in terms of the psychology. They have something new to introduce, but that's just I don't know. I didn't come away from tonight's show thinking that they, you know, that they added a whole lot other than that little sliver of doubt about whether you know they could trust their tag partners. But I think in my head I was like, okay, this is their chance to really focus on that night two match, and it seemed like we were still very focused on the tag match, and so that part of it disappointed me just slightly.
Go ahead.
Yep. Also, you know, I've noticed that we've kind of gone away from the Street Profits being heels. I think that's over clearly because they went back to the old music. And B, AOP is now back to being a 700-pound enhancement talent, as far as what I can see. I don't think either one of these guys is setting the world on fire. Speaking of tag teams, I've noticed that our women's tag teams have zero planned for WrestleMania. And I did see how, I forgot the fellow's first name, McDonald, that does the alternate report on the torch.com. He was mentioning that you could see maybe Bianca and Kaguya against the Kabuki Warriors, which I can't see them not putting Jade into WrestleMania, and I think that ends up being short-term planning with somebody turning on each other between Jade or Bianca, and I just don't want to know your thoughts on that.
What about Naomi in that instead of Jade? What if they save Jade for something different?
I got to be honest with you, Wade. Naomi, you know, she's a very athletically gifted person, but I hear crickets, except for the music and the lit-up shoes when she's out there. It just she's got no pops from what I can hear. And me personally, I'd rather see Jade do almost anything than see Naomi wrestle a 10-minute match.
Jake, over to you. What do you think or expect? I mean, I think Alex is on to something if you know, in terms of they're laying the groundwork for that.
Yeah, I think the you know both of those possibilities are plausible. You know, they have good reason for Naomi to be upset with the Kabuki Warriors, and you know she and Bianca already have an established friendship. If they wanted to throw something together, you know, with Jade, you'd almost have to take Naomi out in some way, shape, or form. And if they wanted to introduce a mystery whodunit about that, I guess they could. You know, I think if down the line, if the money match that you've identified is you know, Jade and Bianca at SummerSlam or wherever you would have that penciled in for, you know, if you want to maximize the impact of that feud, then you do have to build a relationship between the two of them or give them a reason to be antagonistic toward each other. And so I'm sure that will be a part of what they do with all of them for WrestleMania. I you know, you might see Naomi, Bianca, and Jade take on the members of Damage Control that aren't a part of the title match. You know, they could go with a six-woman match and not necessarily put the tag titles on the line. I mean, that wouldn't necessarily, you know, be maximizing the value of those championships, but I don't really see them as having a lot of value right now as it is. So
yeah.
I think there's a couple of different directions they could go. I wouldn't really be mad at any of them. I think it really depends on where Jade Cargill is in her development and where they think she fits best onto that show. Cause they certainly don't want to bring her in and quickly overexpose her in a big WrestleMania match.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea of a six woman tag and you know, who can trust, not who can trust whom. Cause I guess, you know, Naomi and Bianca will, I think, come to match up their belief in needing to unite and sort of be, I mean, obviously, Naomi's trying to get Bianca to forgive Bayley, and it's setting up Bayley coming to the rescue of Bianca in one of these weeks to kind of mend that fence. And I actually like the way they're telling the story. I like when there's, you know, you don't just suddenly, oh, now you're classified as a good guy or a babyface, so Now I'm going to be on your side because I'm one too. I like that Naomi was gone for a while. Bad things didn't happen because of Bayley to her, so she's a little more accepting of her. And she remembers old Bayley, and Belair's like, wait a second, you know, there's a history here, and I'm not ready to leap to Bayley's side. So I think they're telling a good story with this. The acting, I think, was better this week in that regard. I don't think it's actually, I don't think acting has been Naomi's strength, but I thought she's been good in feeling like her sentiment towards Bianca has been heartfelt. Steve, are you going to jump in there?
I don't know how many times was she acting when she kept trying to have a wardrobe malfunctions. What was that all about? Come on, Naomi, you've been doing this for 15 years. I mean, my God, I just didn't see it. One other thing I do have to mention, guys, is that clearly WWE has always been really, really strong when it comes to production values. But I like what I'm seeing more and more, even if they're short pieces of just telling little stories with instead of going to split screen and talking about Snickers, like the thing they did with Bron Breakker, who clearly isn't going to be in the WrestleMania unless he has a ticket. But I just like... this guy is coming, clearly, and I'm just wondering when he's getting involved. Maybe he sticks his nose in the match with Orton and Owens for the next step for this guy. But they've got some talent that's coming, and I do like the way they're presenting it as something to be excited about.
Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're starting to see the impact of WWE bringing in Lee Fitting. He came in from, working College Game Day and College Football Playoffs and Monday Night Football over at ESPN, where they put those kinds of vignettes together for those shows all the time. You know, we're seeing different camera angles. We're seeing different production touches, with Kevin Dunn moving on and WWE bringing in a new head of media and production. You're just seeing different things happening on the show that I think should have been happening for years. And so I'm all for the changes. I think it's made a huge difference in how the shows feel from week to week.
AEW should have been doing these, 4 years ago, just to set themselves apart. And they've been, quite unimaginative and mundane in their approach. However, in defense of AEW, and this is a little backhanded, WWE has these packed, sellout NBA and NHL arenas where you can turn up the lights, you can put a camera in the last row, you can pan the entire crowd, and you don't have to be strategic and kind of focusing in on just a cluster of sections that are full. And that's really opening up possibilities for them. And that's an option that AEW hasn't had all that often. They did a couple weeks ago. They've had some big crowds, obviously, but a lot of smaller ones also. So I like the wandering camera and different ways they're shooting the crowd. Like they were in the crowd on the floor shooting over people's heads. At one point, they opened with the view from the upper deck. They also had a ring cam in the scoreboard looking down at the ring. And then they had another view we haven't seen since they first went on Fox with the camera, I believe, on the crane aiming down at the ring, giving you kind of a different perspective. It almost starts looking like a video game when you're kind of floating above the ring like that, looking down. I thought the cam from that looked like it was placed inside the scoreboard looking down wasn't like 4K. I don't know. There's something about it that didn't look as crisp. I might have imagined it, or maybe there's a technical reason they can't put as good of a camera up there. But nevertheless, there's all kinds of cool stuff that they're doing, and it is freshening up the show. They are going now to wrestlers arriving at the arena. They're showing the exterior of the building that they're in, things I've been harping on AEW to do, because not because it's original, but because it's what everybody else does, NBA, NHL. And WWE is doing it now, and AEW is now, apparently noticing and finally doing it a little bit themselves. It just brings it into the realm of what you see with especially NBA and NHL games, where the athletes are showing arriving at the venue and you get to see outside the venue. My last wish is to show footage of fans arriving at the arena and show that buzz and energy and excitement. I know my local NHL team does that. They always show fans walking up to the venue before the game starts. And it's really cool. It just kind of lets you vicariously live through the fans who are attending that night. I do more concourse shots too of people gathered at the concession stand or whatever. I don't know why they don't do it when sports do it. So I think there's still some room to do some things. I like one, seeing different angles and seeing fresh angles of the action and the crowd, especially when you have a big sellout. I also just want to vicariously feel I'm there. And if you just point a camera at the ring and the stage, you don't get that. You feel like someone else is controlling a very limited view. So just, yeah, big thumbs up to WWE and what they're doing, and a qualified thumbs up to AEW doing some fresh things since their logo change and the LED boards and some new visions there too. Two notes before I forget to say it. Maybe I already forgot one, but one for sure. Steve, I don't think AOP are jobbers. In fact, I mean, they are in the sense that they always lose. But Corey Graves framed their loss as the shock. I know. Corey Graves framed Montez getting the pin as, oh, my God, what a shocker. And it's like, okay, it's a little heavy-handed. If you're watching TV, you shouldn't be shocked. But I'm saying this to say they're not treating AOP losing as expected. They're treating it as an upset if they lose. So there is some lip service at least being paid to sort of protect them. And it was a roll-up, small package type thing. They're definitely not pushing AOP like the Road Warriors were pushed in the mid-80s. You know, it's not like this killer team. And they could be doing that if they wanted, and they're not. But, Jake, they're not just burying them and treating them like nothing. But they're sort of in this middle zone where you kind of expect them to lose, but you also think maybe someday they'll start getting wins, because when they lose, they act like it's a shocker and an upset. What do you think, Jake, about AOP and how they're being framed?
Well, I want to say AOP and Cross beat Lashley in the Street Profits not that long ago, or at least have convincingly beaten them down several times on television.
Yeah,
so
they were like on matches too.
Yeah, I guess they're, you know, so it's not like they've been completely jobbed out continuously where they've looked, you know, weak by comparison. But I still have no idea what the final testament is or what the point of it is. And that's been my issue with anything that's involved Cross in a long, you know, since he's come back to the company. It feels like they're always teasing something that never arrives. It's one of the most frustrating aspects of watching the show is like, okay, is there a point to anything that guy does? And wrapping up AOP and Paul Ellering in it, I don't think improve things, because they never really delivered what AOP are at all, either at any point in their WWE run, this time or the previous one. They're just two big guys that, you know, go out there and have wrestling matches. And so it's been a bit of a mess. And I guess you could say the same for Lashley and the Street Profits too. It seems like they've had several different plans for them that appeared like they were going somewhere and then stopped and then started and going in a different direction. And so I assume we're going to see AOP potentially cost the Profits their match their entrance into the ladder match at WrestleMania, and then we'll see another payoff to that feud at some point. I don't know if you really want to have that on the WrestleMania show, but it just seems like there was unfinished business there, and I think we're going to see that continue at some point.
Steve, back to you.
Well, when they came back, I certainly didn't think that the AOP was going to stand for Ain't Overly Productive, but that being said, you know, you mentioned that the cameras that they had, Wade, you know, you can only have so many cameras. You're going to have an extra one that just happens to ironically be at AJ Styles' house, as far as that goes.
Well, they explained that in their defense. They said that their crew went to interview him about his training for WrestleMania, and so they started interviewing him, and then that's when they created a reason for that.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. Last question. There's the old expression they say about Chekhov's gun. If you show a gun in the first act, it's going to be used by the third act. They showed Tiffany Stratton again, okay? Who gets the first big push? And I already mentioned Breaker. Breaker or Stratton? Who's going to get the first big push in your guys' opinion? I kind of leave you with that.
All right, thanks. Jake, I'll vote. I'll vote for Bron Breakker, but I mean, they're both going to get a different kind of push.
Yeah, I think they're both going to get pushed. I would put them near the top of my list of people I would expect to win the Money in the Bank briefcases this year.
Ah, yeah. What could they both win?
I think so. Yeah. It's certainly a possibility. I think they'd both be excellent candidates for it. They seem to have backed off having Tiffany Stratton on TV in recent weeks. because she was getting positive reactions that I don't think that they expected right away. And so it seems like they're, you know, they've kind of cooled off on that for now and putting her in weekly matches so that, you know, maybe she can continue being a heel by, you know, being involved in these backstage segments. We just saw her tonight putting down Naomi after that situation. So I don't think they've given up on her being a heel, which is I think is a good thing. And Breaker, I mean, he's got the vignettes. He's got everything going for him. So I think he's probably first up, but I would not be shocked if both of them are holding briefcases in, is it July or August or whenever that takes place.
Yep. All right, very good. We'll go to air code 317 next. 317 in the Indianapolis area, I think. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Jordan from Indianapolis. How you doing?
Good, Jordan. Thanks for calling. Are you a first-time caller?
Hey. It's been a few years. I did an AEW on-site for you people back when they first started. It's been a while.
Okay, cool. But, well, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
The first guy might have took what I was going to say, actually. But I was going to say, one with Jade Cargill being on SmackDown, that's kind of surprising to me. I don't know how you guys feel about just the roster balance, since they did bring up Tiffany Stratton up, and obviously they want her to be a bad, a heel. But then Jade, I'm assuming, is coming in as a babyface, I assume. We're not really sure on that yet. But it seems like the SmackDown women's roster is a little stronger, do you guys think, than the Raws right now?
Yeah, Jake, what do you think? I actually hadn't, and I'm surprised, I hadn't run down kind of like the scenario that I thought would be best for Jade. But I think with what we talked about earlier, it might make sense. You know, if she's going to be aligned with Naomi and Bianca, and they want to do something with Bianca. So that it might not be the depth. It might just be that's what they have one particular thing in mind. Jake, your thoughts on what Jordan brought up?
Yeah, I think you're probably right that the balance of star power probably favors SmackDown. I don't think Raw has done a bad job of maximizing the talent they have, though. You know, it seems like they've been able to make Liv Morgan and Nia Jax and Becky and Rhea all feel pretty important over the last several weeks. And so I wouldn't call them at a huge deficit in that regard. But I think if you're considering putting the tag team titles on Cargill and Bianca, then you'll at least have them available to travel between shows, which would make that less of an issue. But I think there's still a lot for Jade to prove. Obviously, she looks like, you know, $1 billion, and she has that jump off the page star power look to her. But it's, you know, we still haven't seen what Jade Cargill, the character, and Jade Cargill, the wrestler, looks like outside of a very, brief time in the Royal Rumble. So I'm very curious to see how well she does in that environment. But I'm looking forward to seeing what she can do. You know, I think SmackDown is a decent spot for her to land because they've been teasing a relationship and possibly an eventual feud with Bianca for, you know, since her appearance in the Rumble. So I think they feel like they have to pay that off sooner than later.
All right, very good. Jordan, back to you.
Yes, I appreciate the answer. With the Bloodline, really Bloodline and Cody side, whatever you want to call that alliance right now, me personally, obviously the Bloodline has just done devious things for the last few years, but why would I really care about Solo or, you know, the Uso brothers right now? Because Solo hasn't wrestled. When's the last time Solo wrestled when he beat Cena? I mean, why would I even – obviously he can come in and do something, but I would think you would still want to keep him strong to show, like, some kind of a presence. And I'm not really – even on Seth and Cody's side, like, Seth's coming off of an injury. He's still dancing around. He doesn't care about Drew is in his way. I always forget which brother's which, but, I mean, I don't understand why I would be fearful of either side, honestly. Like, I don't know if you feel like they're not – you know, showing them enough, and then also just The Rock being an ancillary but important character. It's just kind of like, why did I really care about these people being together, even though this is the biggest match in a long time?
Well, I think they're banking on more people caring more than you about all of that. you know, I think they've done a good job differentiating Jimmy and Jay. I mean, after years of not doing it. But Jake, I mean, is Jordan onto something in terms of, you know, Solo's cooled off? I mean, I think the last thing he did is lose to LA Knight. Just on house shows, like, you know, he's not even, you know, being pushed out. He was on the losing end of a tag match. Also at a house show recently. I think the last time he appeared on like TV itself was like, God, it feels like it was months ago. So yeah. Is there a cooling off of these players or is it fine to not have everybody just, you know, even being super pushed to try to be at some equal level to everybody else in their faction or their alliance?
I think there has been a bit of a cooling off for both Solo and Jimmy in recent months. You know, that when Roman, you know, took his most recent hiatus from TV and they were, you know, they were just kind of being on TV and, you know, taking losses more so than winning, and Jimmy being, nearly a comedy character in the presentation at times. I don't think that did them, you know, any favors in terms of keeping the prestige and the threat level of the bloodline elevated. And so I think they're suffering from that a little bit. You know, it's been a long time since Solo has gotten an important singles win. You know, I can't even recall the last one, you know, since John Cena in Saudi Arabia. So, yeah, I think there's definitely been a cooling off of both Jimmy and, you know, and Solo. And I think they've counted on Roman returning and sort of righting the ship when it came to, you know, the bloodline, and then you add The Rock to the equation, and that sort of muddied things even further. And so I can't blame someone for being a little bit down on the ancillary, you know, the lower bloodline characters. You know, they just have not been treated, you know, anywhere near as important as they were a year ago, for instance. You know, when you really had them, you know. You had the Usos involved in one of the, you know, main events of WrestleMania last year. And, you know, they're certainly not going to approach that this year. And I thought, you know, following WrestleMania last year, when Solo cost Cody the title, and then eventually went on to, you know, defeat John Cena soundly at WrestleMania, that he might be a major player on this year's WrestleMania, but that doesn't seem to be in the cards. And so I definitely think there's been a lowering of their stock in some ways, but we'll see what happens. There's still time to lift them back up again as time progresses. But I would have to believe that they would have to be involved with The Rock, because I assume Roman Reigns is going to be taking some time off post Mania, if I was going to wager at this point.
Yeah, looking at CageMatch.net, the last win for Solo is it. Crown Jewel last year. I'm looking at like tag matches or anything. I think he's been on losing out of everything other than that. And then he just had very, very few TV matches and, you know, they've been losses. He got, I think there was a, yeah, he was on Saturday's main event. He lost to AJ Styles. He got a TV win over Sheamus going back to June of last year. He just hasn't wrestled much on TV and certainly isn't getting a mega push. But, you know, in a way, I think they're just kind of keeping a low profile on the back burner until, you know, and don't want people to really remember too much about what's going on with him in the ring. He's got, in a way, a good gig. He's not spending a lot of bumps on his bump card in the meantime, but earning money. But, yeah, if Reigns takes time off, then I think you're going to, you know, see a Solo get more of a push. Jordan, anything else for us?
I don't think I really do. I was going to say I'm kind of leaning towards Roman winning, but that's probably a 25% chance, as my Tyler doesn't want to go to sleep when she's yelling. But, yeah, I'll just put that there. I'm on the side of I don't really care about Cody's character in a lot of ways, but I don't really want to go on a whole monologue about that and waste your time. But thank you for taking my call.
Sure, yeah, good to hear from you. Thanks. All right. right. I always want to hear kids in the background going, what about me? All right, let's go to Joe in New York, and then we also have Jason from Australia on hold, and we are anticipating hearing from an outside correspondent who is watching the Dark main event also. Joe, welcome. Good to hear from you again. What's on your mind about tonight's show?
Yes, good evening, guys. Let's talk about the closing segment for a minute with Roman and Cody. It was an important night because Cody and Roman have to remind everybody that they are the main event. Because if you were watching this, you would think The Rock and Cody were going to have the match.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
They really didn't do much. It wasn't bad, but they didn't give you a reason to want to watch them fight. I mean, Cody's going to finish the story, but that's all they're counting on, is that everybody's going to want to see Cody finish the story. There's no real build to their match. And the other thing is, this whole number two, number one thing, the obvious answer from Cody should have been, Roman, despite your 3-year reign, you're not even the number one guy in your family. The Rock is, because not only is he the big star, but he comes out to a separate entrance than the rest of you. That's the answer. I mean, that's the comeback, really. And you start putting the thought out there when you see Roman seething and you know, that should be what they're doing, seething and, you know, getting under his skin. And they didn't do that. They're not giving you a reason to see them on a fight other than he lost last year. Let's have him win this year.
Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, I think in part I agree with that. You know, they have yet to really separate the night two main event from the overall presentation of, you know, Cody and Seth versus The Rock and Roman. And I thought tonight would be a good opportunity for them to really hammer home what has made Cody and Roman feel like a big time feud, you know, going back to last year's WrestleMania, and they had some brief face-to-face encounters that felt like big moments on TV at various points throughout the year where they kind of touch base with it. And I didn't think they found any new ground to cover here. And so that's been my issue with this build thus far, is that, you know, you've spent so much time getting the night one tag match over and then The Rock's involvement. And clearly, you know, there's, and I think Wade, you've touched on this on a number of your shows over the past couple of weeks, you know, whether there's real animosity between some of the players involved here or, you know, they're playing it up for such. I think that's really gotten in the way of hammering home the, you know, what really is the, you know, what I think will be the conclusion of a 3+ year story of Roman Reigns' title run and that coming to an end. And to have that sort of playing in the background of The Rock appearing and getting involved in the tag match, it hasn't necessarily harmed selling WrestleMania and making the show feel special. But there's going to come a point after WrestleMania where they might wish they had spent more time on it, because The Rock's going to fall to the wayside and you're going to have a new champion in Cody Rhodes trying to launch himself as the company's next big star. And if you don't execute properly at WrestleMania and the match doesn't feel as special as it should, that might not get off to the hot start you want it to. And so I hope in the next couple of weeks they're able to, you know, really ratchet up and make that night two match feel like it has huge stakes. You know, they started out, the whole reason that Seth Rollins wanted to be Cody's shield in that whole business was because the whole future of the company was at stake. You know, The Rock and Roman, if they don't end Roman's title reign, you know, they're going to continue to not only dominate, you know, the company and the on-screen product with Roman being this long-running champion, but now you have The Rock potentially dominating the company from the boardroom. And so they have, you know, they have these seeds planted, but they have yet to really etch it out in detail in promos. And I'm hoping they still get to that, but you know, I guess my confidence kind of wanes as time goes on. And so hopefully the next couple of weeks they can hit some home runs in these promos.
Yeah, good comments there. Anything else you want to comment on?
Yeah, they definitely, I could tell right in the beginning of the show that they were not going to put a full court press on tonight because of the basketball, because they started the show with three matches. And when they do that, I thought I was watching AEW here for a second. match after match. And you only got 2 weeks before Mania, and you don't have as much as you think because next weekend is Easter weekend. If they think people are going to go away, so they're not going to be watching Friday Night SmackDown. People are going to go away for the holiday, so they don't have as much time as they think they do. And also, I want to comment on the women. Now, the women's division in wrestling, in both companies, is average at best because people don't care about women's wrestling. It's still the bathroom break or the concession stand break. No matter how much they want to say there's a revolutionary thing, it doesn't show in ratings or anything because the fact is they don't prioritize it, either company. And Ronda Rousey, she even showed you that there's a casting couch in WWE. She came out and said that. And this is supposed to be after the revolution. And obviously with Vince McMahon's behavior, they have not made the progress that people think or want to say that they made over the last 10 years. That company, if you discontinued women's wrestling tomorrow, I don't think many people would care because it's just not – here in the United States, it's not a big thing. Your thoughts?
I think a lot of people would care. Jake?
Yeah, I guess I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I think there's a number of very over women stars in the company, and I think their reactions on a week-to-week basis prove that. People are very into Bianca Belair. They're very into Rhea Ripley. Becky Lynch at one time was the most over star in the company, bar none, and that's waned somewhat as the years have gone on, but she still gets great reactions. That women's main event on Monday, the no-holds-barred match, was well-received. I think there would be a lot missing from the show if the women suddenly, fell completely out of favor with the company management and they didn't, present them as serious competitors anymore. I think they've more than earned their place, even since the first women's main event of WrestleMania at 35, there have been very successful women's programs on every subsequent WrestleMania since, and I think they'd be much lesser shows without them. So I hope that there's that there's more of a priority placed on them. I agree with you that there's certainly more effort that could be placed into building women's stories and characters and presenting them as being an even larger part of the show. But I certainly personally would miss them if they were gone. I think they've more than earned that spot that they get on these shows and on these WrestleManias and major pay-per-views.
And this is a little bit of an off year just because you've got Rock, you have the Cody Roman rematch, you were going to have CM Punk, but Drew is doing such good work, you have two men's world titles, and unless there's a women's world title match that just clearly deserves to end the night, now there's two men's title matches and a Rock, biggest tag match in WrestleMania history competing with it. And so, and then you have Charlotte getting hurt and you have Becky a little bit cold relative to what they were expecting. Jade Cargill isn't heated up yet. Bayley's fine, and that's a nice story, but it doesn't feel WrestleMania main event worthy. So you're just kind of in, and even with the tag matches, the tag titles we talked about earlier. It's just not, it's a little bit of an off year, but there's going to be on years also. And when they are leaning on a women's story, and, whether it's Jade Cargill or Belair or Becky or Charlotte coming back or whomever, there's going to be times where the women seem like or if it's Tiffany Stratton or whoever, there's going to be a year where it seems like, two of the women's matches are bigger than, whatever Cody and Roman or Drew or Seth or whomever or Bron Breakker are doing, whoever the main eventer is, or Gunther. So there's going to be an ebb and flow to it. But, more than anecdotal evidence is people would be very disappointed to see the women's wrestling go away completely. I just think you have to accept sometimes there's an ebb and flow to, when certain characters are hot in that division. Joe, anything else?
As far as Jade Cargill, it's time to get the ball going with her. I mean, they signed her in September, I think it was, somewhere around there, and she's barely making TV. I mean, let's get going here. I don't know what they're doing. It's time to get the ball rolling. You know, she's been wasted. And that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like, they do have women that could do stuff, but they don't let them do it. They hold them back. They don't give them the build. Or basically, if you're not in the title picture, you get lost in the shuffle in both companies. That's how I feel. Like,
I think that
the title picture, yeah.
I think that last comment is fair. I don't think the other ones are. When it comes to Jade, she's not necessarily ready. You know what I mean? Like, they have made her out to be a very big deal because they're not putting her out there in a way where she can fail. And I think they want her to get better so that when she does show up, she lives up to the hype. And I think it's good to take their time. And, you know, they made a really big deal out of her just signing with SmackDown and now appearing next week for the first time as an official SmackDown roster superstar. And, you know, whatever she does at WrestleMania, they're continuing to protect her and treat her as a big star. It is a slow build, but she didn't come turnkey ready. She did in terms of coming across as a star and carrying herself that way. But, you know, she's working out. She's trying to, you know, improve her ring skills, which were very, very limited in AEW during that run. So who else do you think they're not working hard to get the most out of, Joe? In fairness to your argument, like, can you list someone besides Jade who's just really green and a recent signing?
Well, Bayley, for instance, she should be – it's her overall push in her career. She has been misused and mistyped and cast. They wasted her so much. And they're finally, you know, maybe they're finally getting it right, but it's like you wasted how many years doing it the wrong way. And, you know, they don't go with people when they're hot. They kind of let them get cool, and then they want to heat them up again. And it doesn't work like that. I mean, that's where you have to take advantage of, and I don't particularly like it, but you have to take advantage of the internet people. You have to listen to the people a little bit as far as, like, who's hot and who's not, and not try to cool off everybody who the people want, because when you cool them off, you can't just heat them back up despite what they say. That cannot be done. It doesn't work that way. And it's not 1985.
No, it's not 1985. What were you going
to
say?
No, I'm just saying it's not 1985 where you don't have, like, interaction with the fans the way, you know, you have limited interaction. You could tell. You can get the opinion. I'm not saying to do everything the fans want, because that doesn't work either. But you have to gauge it. You have to use it as a tool. And I don't think these companies do.
I would say in the case of Bayley, she was getting a real big push during COVID and the empty arena era. And then she got hurt. And then when she came back, she's gotten a really big push and has been a central character. I disagree, Joe, that that's an example of somebody they dropped the ball. If you want to go pre-COVID, I mean, that's going, you know, a ways back, and maybe you could, you know, construct a case. But in terms of recently speaking, I mean, they've tried with Liv, they've tried with Bianca, they obviously want to keep, you know, Charlotte and Becky hot as centerpiece, you know, kind of legacy acts in that division. They've brought people up. Some are ready, some aren't. Jake, I'll throw to you. How do you grade, and do you have any specific pro or cons that either support or refute kind of Joe's framing of things?
I mean, I the thing I agreed with that Joe said was people do tend to disappear when they're not involved in title feuds. And that, you know, that goes for really anybody except the top stars, you know. So there have been a lot of injuries in the women's division over the last couple of years, and so that has played a factor in whether or not, you know, people have really gotten an opportunity to succeed. But I do think, you know, you look at how the success they've had with Rhea, you look at the success they're having now with Liv Morgan, they're really, I mean, they got a lot of criticism when they brought back Nia Jax, and I think they've shown that, you know, she has value that a lot of people didn't perceive that she had. You know, on the SmackDown side of things, I think they have, you know, kind of dropped the ball. They certainly haven't gotten the most out of Kairi since her return. I think, you know, they have a lot invested in Asuka, and she's sort of drifted into being, you know, one of the three, you know, sort of Japanese women that share a brain and damage control that have become hard to differentiate. And I think that part of, you know, the women's division has struggled. But as far as the major stars, the Charlottes, the Biancas, the Beckys, the Rhea's, the even Bayley to a degree, I think they do have a pretty strong core group of talent that they can use to get people over. And they have Jade and they have Liv and they have a couple of others that seem to be on the way up. Tiffany Stratton is somebody that I would put in that category, who is far better than anybody could have expected her to be at this point in her career. So I think the future of the women's division looks pretty good for the next couple of years, as long as people can stay healthy.
Joe, back to you. Anything else you want to bring up before we move on?
Yes, one final point. Wait, any concern about the Raw rating? I mean, three of the last 4 weeks they've been in the 1.6s, and that's not where you want to be at WrestleMania season. They're nowhere near a 2.0, and I feel WWE and AEW, both companies, I think they would like you to think only 2 million people have cable in the whole world, but there's many people out there that still do have cable or even have a stream, and it's like there's a disconnect somewhere, because that rating should be higher, especially as you're getting closer to your biggest show. And I think one final point I want to make, I think the mistake WWE makes is they do too much with the YouTube. You shouldn't be able to watch the segment 10 minutes after it happened on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was a network paying all that money, I would say at least wait to the next morning to put those things up. And I'm curious to see what Netflix is going to do when they're paying $8 billion.
Yeah.
Because they should not be putting that segment up 15 minutes after it happened. And it conditions the fan that I don't have to watch the show.
Yeah, I mean, it is I'm sure WWE has been conflicted over the years about it. At this point, there's so much cord cutting, and there's so many people who don't watch the product start to finish, and they're making so much money off of being a 52-week-a-year reliable, solid top five show on cable on their night of the week, often number one, other than major sports. So, I'm sure they think, yeah, we'd do better ratings if we didn't condition fans think they can watch highlights. But I also think they just realize there's some fans who don't have cable, and there's other people who are only going to watch highlights. So we better give it to them, because that's how they integrate into the product. As for the Raw numbers, if we look at the 18 to 49 demo, which is, the mainly tracked rating at this point, a year ago through 12 weeks, they averaged a 0.53. And so far this year through 12 weeks, they're at a 0.55. So, I mean, year over year, they're up. You know, AEW is flat or down a little bit. 2 years ago, they were at 0.45 during the first 12 weeks in that demo. So, I mean, it's not bad. It really isn't. I mean, the cable audience is shrinking. Total average viewership, let's see, the first 12 weeks of the year, it's that Raw average viewership is 1.713 million. And through 12 weeks last year, it was 1.833 million. And so that's, reflective of the number of homes that have access to it dropping. But the percentage of homes that have it, who are watching, is actually up. So you have kind of competing things going on. Jake, what do you think about the Raw viewership and ratings, and maybe more pertinently, Joe's second point there about putting stuff and making it available on YouTube so quick afterwards that, people go, I don't need to invest 2-3 hours and watch it?
Yeah, I guess on the ratings front, it seems pretty clear that Netflix wasn't afraid of those numbers. They paid an incredible amount of money to get a hold of Raw.
And they think they're growing and cable shrinking. USA and Netflix have similar reach right now, and I think Netflix thinks they can create new fans and grow.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable assumption, just given they're a much smarter company when it comes to knowing what their audience likes. And they know they have the ability to reach people through their algorithms. And I think they're banking on the prospect of being able to put Raw in front of a lot of people that USA can't. And, I guess I don't know how freely they're going to be putting out their metrics once the switch happens and all that, for us to find that information. But I hope we get those answers, you know, soon after they start broadcasting. But, you know, at the end of the day, the ratings were good enough to get them the TV contract that they wanted. And so I guess it's, you know, it's a moot point to some level. But as far as the YouTube stuff goes, I think they make a ton of money off their YouTube channel. Like I think they might be one of the top 10 channels in the world in terms of subscribers, certainly the number one in sports. You know, they have almost 100 million YouTube subscribers, or maybe they got close to ticking over that number recently. And when you're having millions of views on hundreds of videos and you're getting all that ad revenue, I don't expect that to stop anytime soon. It's one of their ways of reaching people who no longer have cable subscriptions.
And you know, like if you go on YouTube now, there's a WBN USA Network official channel. You know, they got 40,000 views less than an hour after the face-to-face of Cody and Roman. And WBN Fox is the one putting up the LA Knight AJ Styles angle. So they're not running from it. The networks are using, you know, their accounts also in order to promote their brand. And I think they see it also as like, here's a sample, but if you want to see the whole thing, you know, you got to watch on Fox. And I think they see it as a way to kind of introduce people to the product. Joe, I want to get to our on-site correspondent and Jason from Australia. Any real quick closing note you have since Jake and I just talked for a few minutes there?
No, that's it, guys. Have a great weekend.
Cool. Yep. Thanks. Good topics. All right, we've got Ross, who just left the arena tonight with some notes on the live experience. Ross, is now a good time to talk to you?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we sure can.
Hello?
Cool. Yeah,
how's it going?
Yeah, yeah, good. Thanks for taking time to talk to us after your experience with the show tonight.
Anytime.
Yeah, well, let's actually start with what happened off air, because you sent me an email with a Yeet Fest going on. Talk about after SmackDown ended with the Bloodline and Cody and Crew staring each other down. What happened after that?
So after that, we had a dark match with Dominic and Kofi, and Kofi won, and that was pretty short. It was only like 10 minutes. But then Gunther came out against Jay. Gunther won, but then Solo and Jimmy showed up, and then Cody ran out, and then Gunther disappeared, and they had a Yeet Fest. They're all taking turns pumping up the audience. It was a good time. Something you don't
so
see on
is
TV.
A huge
you know?
Crowd. Yeah, yeah. And that's what – I know wrestlers have fun, you know, and they get to let loose a little bit like that in front of a live crowd and feed off of them and give them a little something extra. It was a huge crowd tonight. I assume it was a legit sellout to your eyes, like the last row of the whole upper deck was full. Nothing was tarped off.
Yeah. You know, there was nothing tarped off. I actually been keeping my eye on Ticketmaster the last few weeks, and tickets were pretty close to sold out if they weren't. A few random seats here and there, but nothing like a whole section. The energy tonight was great. The audience was loving it. I mean, it was a great show. I couldn't hear anything anybody said from where I sat, but...
Oh, no.
Everybody was loving
it. Where'd you
sit? I was on the corner right in front where they walk out, so you could see me with my Becky Lynch Santa hat all night.
Oh, fun.
So,
yeah, I wonder why. Too bad the sound
is. There's a terrible echo on the floor. Yeah, just the floor where I sat has an echo. But Bianca had a really huge pop. Cody had a huge pop. I'd say Jay, Cody, and Bianca had the biggest pops, honestly.
In any order or all pretty?
Cody had chance all night, up and down. I would say Cody, but Bianca's was surprisingly large. I was surprised at how loud the pop was. People were chanting Bailey during the commercial breaks too. I thought we were going to get her tonight because she was at the Bucks game last night and giving out tickets, but we only got the backstage segment.
Oh yeah, that's she didn't appear in front of you, did she?
No, but she's here.
At all? Yeah.
We also had Rollins show up tonight too. That was cool.
Yeah, Raw guy showing up. Got to see him. So talk a little more about the Yeet Fest. Like, how long did it go? Were all the fans still in the building, or did they lose like 10, 20, 30% since it was getting late?
I would say maybe late on a Friday night Central time. I would say maybe less than 10% of the people left because they knew that Cody was going to come back out. Cody and Jay and Jimmy all took turns doing the Yeet thing and seeing who could get the loudest audience response. And then Cody talked about how he always has something to give away. but didn't this time, and then took off his shoe. Him and Jay signed the shoe, and then he threw one out to the audience, and then Jay threw the other one. Then he took the last half hour to sign autographs shoeless.
Oh,
so,
oh wow.
Cody's the man. He's earning his place at the top of the pyramid, that's for sure.
He wants to do all the stuff that top baby faces in WWE are always expected to do, but not everyone wants to. Roman didn't want to do that. Roman didn't want to stand out barefoot, sign an autograph for a half hour on a Friday night. He things worked out well for him, but that was not his something he embraced. But, you know, Cody's all into that. I think Cody should have given away both shoes to the same person, so at least they're useful, too. You can wear them. Yeah. How about the pop for Rey Mysterio?
Ray, that was a big one, too. Actually, I almost forgot about that because that was right off the bat. I didn't expect him right away.
Yeah.
That was great, man.
It was like a long time ago.
Ray, for his age, that guy is so fast and he flies so high. He's a great time. Matches are always fun.
Did the crowd react to the Street Profits as just full-fledged babyfaces against AOP? And then how did their reaction rank?
I was kind of distracted at that time. I want to say that they had a good reaction, better than AOP.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I had a bathroom break during that match, so.
Sure.
I apologize.
Yeah, no, I do apologize. Jake, is there anything you want to bring up and ask Ross?
Yeah, I'm curious what how the reaction went for Dominic in particular. I don't recall it being especially loud on TV, but I'm curious what the perspective was from the building.
Well, as soon as his music hit, people started booing, and as soon as he walked out, it got louder. People just love to boo that guy. It's amazing. I mean, I think secretly everybody loves him. But they booed him intensely, and yeah, it was fun. They had a good match. Like I said, that one was only like 10 minutes long or something, I think.
Anything else, Jake, you want to throw out there?
Yeah, you mentioned Bianca getting a huge reaction. It didn't seem like Damage Control got much of one. Is that accurate, or was my TV betraying me?
Everybody wanted Bayley tonight. I think a lot of Milwaukee was expecting her because she was at the Bucks game and on TV last night. So people during some of the commercial breaks were chanting for Bayley, and then when Damage Control came out, they did get a little pop, but it wasn't a Bayley pop like I would have expected if Bayley showed up tonight. Kind of hoping she'd show up with help out Naomi.
Russ, was there anything before SmackDown went live on the air with the rematch?
We had a couple of those speed matches.
How'd that go?
Cool. It was all right. They were super short. And, you know, to be honest, I'm not very familiar with the guys that were there first. I'm trying to look at my pictures. So Odyssey Jones was there. Who was the other guy?
Okay.
Tyler Bate was there. I forget who Odyssey Jones wrestled. I'm sorry.
Yeah. What was it? Was the
Tyler
format kind of cool? Like, was it?
Yeah, so they were like short 5-6 minute matches. They had a guy and they had a clock on the screen. And it would count down. The announcer would yell, you know, 1 minute, and then the match would end within a minute. I mean, there were nobody ran out of time. Everything finished within the time limit. So I'd be curious to see. I don't know if they air those somewhere, like on YouTube.
Yeah, it's a YouTube thing. Or no, it's an Twitter X thing, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Twitter.
We decided to get in business with Elon.
I'm
going
to have to
perfect
look
it
up.
Timing.
Yeah. Gotcha, yeah, right.
God, what a flake. The from a format standpoint, like did it seem like the wrestlers were wrestling at a very different pace, and did that get the crowd kind of like getting in their seats, or did people look at it like, yeah, just how did it come across with that more sense of urgency in the format?
Yeah, I mean, the match was sort of fast. I mean, you hardly had time to really grasp what was going on. If you were walking to your seat, by the time you like looked up and got to your seat, the match was over. They were just super fast. It was a good mood setter, although last time we had a tag team match that was a 10 or 15 minute tag team match before the show, which I really enjoyed. I think I like that better than the short 3-5 minute matches because we didn't really have time to get into it.
Yeah. Well, Jake, what do you think about that concept?
The speed concept?
Yeah. Is that just like, it's kind of fun and different, why not? Or, you know, it's an abomination, or you're intrigued, or what?
You know, it just comes across like an experiment to me. Like, can we, you know, capture people who otherwise have no interest in the product, by getting them on social media and drawing them into our normal programming? I'm not offended by it. You know, it seems very much like an experimental idea. I haven't really spent a lot of time watching the matches myself, so I can't really comment on them directly. But I think conceptually it's, you know, they're trying all kinds of things to reach audiences that they can't normally reach. So, and I think they have to do that if they want to continue to grow and survive.
I want to see the NBA's G League to have a game that lasts only 8 minutes and there's two basketballs at any given time, and put that on social media, and we'll see how that does. It does feel a little gimmicky, but it doesn't break from the spirit of anything. I mean, you know, hey, you gotta, there's a sense of urgency. You gotta take more chances to try to win. So, anyway, Ross, anything else you want to share from the show tonight?
Not really. Just after witnessing the crowd, Cody's the man, and I think everybody thinks so. You know, there are people acknowledging Roman, and I mean, even I acknowledge Roman, but I'm a bigger Cody fan than him, and I think everybody else is too. It was a good time.
Was there a low point of the show, like Anderson and Gallows against Theory and Waller, or were people into that? I mean, it's only 7 minutes.
I feel like they were more into that than the Street Profits, maybe, but I could be wrong. Maybe I was into it more than the Street Profits, but those definitely were the low points of the show, because we had, like, the entire Bloodline show up, and Cody was there, and Ray was there. Some of the other matches just didn't stand out like that, you know?
I was going to ask about the Bloodline Cody thing. We got, you know, commercial breaks, long ring entrances. Did it seem to test the patience of the fans at all, or were they just into both long ring entrances and it just built tension effectively?
When we're there, the long ring entrances feel cool. You know what I mean? It's great. But when you're on TV, it just feels too long. So I think they need to find a balance there. you know, they go to commercial after Roman, and then he just stands there in the ring and it's dark for 2, 3, 4 minutes, or they do the best sign, or, you know, let's see, like, go crazy, let's see you dance, and they start showing everybody on the screen for a minute.
Right, yeah. All right, cool. Russ, anything else you want to sneak in? Otherwise, we'll let you get back to whatever you got planned.
No, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much.
Anytime.
Do you want to be an on-site course? Yeah, thank you. If you want to be an on-site correspondent on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, drop me a line at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com and just put the city and the date in the subject line. It helps me stay a little more organized, and you can do what Ross just did and tell us about your experience. I think it's cool when you get to hear the sounds of the arena or the post-show buzz and get pretty instant insight into things that maybe don't come across on TV. All right, we will, before getting to some emails, we'll bring on Jason, Australia. Jason, always fun to see you pop up again. It's great getting your insight again. What's on your mind tonight? How's it going?
Yeah, thanks, Wade. Going well, and nice to speak to you, Jake. Just regarding the final segment, you know, I've been calling up the past couple of weeks, Wade. I've been happy with what I've been seeing. I've been really excited. I don't know, this last segment was a bit of a miss for me, but I want to temper that by saying I realize, like you guys said, you can't always hit a home run. Sometimes you've got to hit a double, but I think this segment, I don't think Cody came across the best. I don't think he comes across as good as what he normally does when he's playing off somebody who has a more natural style to their delivery when they're talking. And Roman even mentioned that. He said, hey, man, you're like a politician. You know, do you have any babies that you need to kiss or whatever? Cody's promo style and the way he delivers it, it's more suited when he's doing a monologue in the ring, like he did on Monday. Came across really well. But with Roman comes across like he's just, everything's just coming off the top of his head. He's just talking normal, where Cody seems to be a bit more, I don't know, manufactured. I know that's been a criticism of his, but tonight I thought it was really prevalent, so... Yeah, I don't know. It's a minor criticism, I guess, but I didn't like this interaction. And the other thing that I'm going back and forth on is they both seem to have a good answer, or they just sort of shrugged off the concern about the other person being able to trust their partner. So when Roman asked Cody, Cody said, well, Seth hates you more than what he hates me. That's a good reply. And then when Roman brought up about how Seth stabbed Roman in the back, so that's a good, you know, good call back to history. But then when Cody said to Roman, you know, what about The Rock? And Roman says, well, we're going there again. That's yesterday's news. I get that it suits his character to sort of shrug that off, but I'd like him to sell it more because this is, I believe the fans have a lot of intrigue in the power dynamic between The Rock and Roman and don't really want to think about Seth betraying Cody because it's almost like they don't want to go down that path. They don't want to think about that. There's more intrigue in what's happening with The Rock and Roman dynamic, the power struggle, and I think Roman kind of shrugging that off, and I get that suits his character. I would have liked him to solve that a little bit more because I think there's far more intrigue in that for the fans. And just the way Solo Sikoa and Jimmy circled the ring, then came to Roman's side, and then we saw Jay and Seth, and the change of the music midstream, to me that came across a little bit too staged. So I've been liking what WWE been doing lately, but this segment, and I realize they all can't be a hit, I put this more of a miss, that the way it came across a bit more overly staged and just Cody, in the contrast with Roman, I thought Roman came across a little bit more stronger.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the three of us are too far apart on any of that. I'm a little more, I don't know if tolerance the word, but accepting of the idea that, you know, the WWE director with the soundboard kind of whoever has the momentum gets their music played. And it's just sort of, you know, you trust their judgment on what music to play. It's not so much orchestrated as just sort of policy. You know, someone's kind of doing their job. And it's not like the music, you know, came before something happened and portended something they shouldn't know. Jake, what do you think about what Jason said about Cody and monologues versus interacting? I thought he did well. I mean, like, I'll add this. Before Cody arrived in WWE, if you said Cody's going to stand in the ring for, you know, 10 minutes and go face-to-face with Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman and look like he belongs and he is owning that space as much as any babyface opposite of Roman has and is going to have confidence in the crowd behind him and comeback lines and all that. I mean, like if he has even if you think, well, it's not his strength, like we're not debating whether he deserves his top spot. Like as our on-site correspondent just said, he was the top star tonight and the fans are totally into him. You know, it's sort of good to step back and go, this guy's a success where we're just sort of evaluating him on, you know, the context in which he shines as opposed to even doubting that he belongs in this spot and looks the part. So I'll sneak that in, but more to Jason's point, did anything about this feel orchestrated or less than normal for Cody?
I guess I would agree with Jason in the sense that I think his promo on Monday was stronger just in terms of its intensity and the fire that Cody brought to the table during his monologue. You know, with Roman, I think there is that element of him being extremely comfortable in this character. And he's very good at delivering lines in character that feel natural. Like he can speak from the heart of this character he's built very easily. With Cody, I get the impression that he's just a bit more careful. And there's also, and Wade, I'm curious to get your opinion on this. I think it's difficult for me to know where Cody the character starts and Cody the actual guy is. And I think there's a lot more internal discussion or, you know, there's a lot more going on in his head when he's thinking about his lines and how he wants to deliver them. And sometimes that can make him feel a bit disconnected from the delivery, you know. And I think that happened a few times during this promo where it felt like he was pondering what he was about to say while he was saying it. And in some ways it makes him feel a little bit further away from it. Like he's speaking from a 10,000 foot view at times, but I don't think any of it was bad. I just think with Cody, there's always this, this translation layer that happens at times, particularly when he's in conversational promos. You know, with monologues, when he's got a script that he can stick to, it's easier. But I think natural reactions for him in character are a bit more difficult than they are for Roman.
Yeah, I don't know that I like. To me, if you're processing thoughts before you say them, it feels less scripted and more natural. But I know what you're saying when you go, you know, where does the character end or where does real Cody end and the character begin? Because there's not a big difference. I mean, I don't know Cody well, but I know him well enough, and have interacted with him enough to, you know, have a sense that, you know, Cody's Cody. I mean, the authenticity, like interacting with Cody, you know, in person or doing a podcast interview with him or texting with him is like so exactly what you would expect it to be based on his TV character. I mean, it's just, that's who he is. There's not like, you know, oh, I'm going to dial something down or I'm going to be more or less personable. Like there's no front with him, which is part of what I, you know, like genuinely like about him is that what you see is who he is. He genuinely really likes shaking hands and signing autographs with the fans. He didn't want to turn heel in AEW because he wanted to, you know, he's kind of the John Cena thing. He wanted to do the charity work and meet with fans. Like, he really, really likes it. I mean, I probably, you know, to a point where some people, you know, some wrestlers look at him and go, you know, under their breath, call him a mark. And I, you know, I mean, teach their own, but if you're in the business of trying to win fans over and you're just, you generally appreciate that they like your character, I think that's a good thing, not something to make fun of, and the business could use more of that. And he has the success now to back up buying into his own act that much. But it took some editing. You know, I mean, there is some, you know, like part of what I think you're going to get, Jake, is what happened in AEW where he'd have all these thoughts and he didn't edit. And I think what's happening is he's processing staying on track with a live show. Here's exactly the beats we have to hit. And we only have exactly the amount of time to hit those beats before we go off the air. Jason, I'll throw it back to you. Jake and I had a lot to say. Anything you want to respond to there, or certainly you can change topics too.
No, I agree with everything you guys are saying. And, you know, because I'm thinking to myself, like, I'm a big fan of Cody and I want him to do well. Just when I listen to him talk about his dad and his family and what he's gone through, you know, like, I'm a big fan of him as a person. And maybe I'm being a little bit unfair, but I'm just talking about how he comes across compared to Roman. I don't want to be that nitpicking guy because I'm not that, but I don't know. It's just, you know what it is? Sometimes these wrestlers, they talk too much in interviews and then things stay stuck in your head. So it stayed stuck in my head that he gave an interview once and he talked about how he workshops promos and he talks to this person, talks to that person. Like, I wish I didn't hear that. Like, these wrestlers need to stop talking about all this behind-the-scenes stuff and how they do this and this promo promo class and all this stuff. Like, it annoys me because then the stuff gets stuck in my head. It's like the toothpaste out of the tube. You can't put it back in. Now I'm thinking every time he's talking, he's workshopped something, as opposed to just coming across natural. So I wish they stopped talking about that, because then I wouldn't think of Cody in that way. But you know what I mean?
Well,
you know,
let me try to make you
too much, and you can't hear it.
Let me try to make you feel better about it, because like if you're going to go talk to your boss about an issue you have at work, you're going to workshop it before you approach him. If you're going on a first date or you have to have a serious talk with a friend or a family member, you're going to workshop it. You know, I don't think that means it's orchestrated in a way that makes it less authentic.
Why does
it just
he have
means
to tell me that? Why does he have to tell me that that way? Why do I have to know that as an audience? Like, because now I'm going to be thinking about it. Like, these wrestlers don't need to tell us everything.
Trust me, I'm on your team in general when it comes to that. But in this case, I don't think you should be bothered by him sharing with you that before he goes to the ring, he thinks about what he wants to say and how he wants to say it. I mean, I don't think that's pulling the curtain back. I think fans would want, you know, I mean, there's time. You don't want to workshop. You don't want to say, I workshop something that's going to be impromptu and that's going to come across as improvised, but I know it's planned, and so I'm planning out how I'm going to make it seem improvised. You don't want that, but if he's got a segment advertised for Raw and you now know that he's said, well, I like to workshop what I'm going to say, well, he's on national TV in front of millions of people, and he's advertised. I would hope he wouldn't just go out there without having given thought to it. So I'm really trying to make you feel better. I'm like agnostic in terms of whether that aspect should be talked about or not, but I genuinely don't see harm in it, but you know, I don't think it adds anything. I just don't think there's a negative to it either.
I can sympathize with what you're saying, though. There are There are segments that I watch on TV sometimes where it's like, I know too much about what's going on here to get the maximum amount of enjoyment out of it. You know what I mean? Like, I think that does affect you as a fan, where if you're somebody who's really plugged in to, you know, paying attention to what wrestlers are saying in interviews, paying attention to other people's opinions about things, you can sort of step on your own enjoyment at times. And there is, you know, some things that people can say or do away from the product and outside of their character that affect how you perceive them, you know, for a long period afterwards. And so I'm not completely unsympathetic to the statement, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not either. I just think in this specific, it's an exception for me, I guess, where I'm more okay with it. Jason, go ahead.
I get everything you're saying. And at the end of the day, look, Cody, he's a Rhodes. And like I told you a couple of weeks ago, he's always going to have that image. The fans are always going to have that image in their head of him wrestling in a Hell in a Cell with that torn pec, which takes an awful amount of guts to do. So, you know, he can afford to do whatever because he's always going to have that credibility behind him. I was just talking specifically against Roman, and Jake raised a really good point. Roman is so in control of his character and has the ability to talk in a way. And I guess when you're a heel, it's like they say, as a heel, you can afford to sip on a banana peel and people expect that. So even in your promos, you probably have that ability to be a bit more comfortable in what you're saying. And we're seeing that with Drew, as opposed to a babyface where you probably have to be a little bit more meticulous because, you know, you're trying to tell a story and you're trying to have people still like you. So even though I may have been a tad critical, as I'm playing it out in my mind, I get where Cody's coming from. I'm just talking about, you know, when Roman made that comment, you sound like a politician. To me, that really stung because I think people say, yeah, it kind of does sound that way. So sometimes I almost tell too much of the truth and then you think it's damaging. But to the point that I raised before, what did you guys think of them sort of blowing off sort of the trust issues and having answers to that? I get from their character point of view, they want to have answers to that. But do you agree with me that the power dynamic between The Rock and Roman really should be needled more by Cody and have Roman react to that in a stronger way as opposed to saying, oh, that's yesterday's news? Or do you think that's wise so that if they do have a power dynamic, Roman sort of never saw it coming? What do you think about that?
Jake, what do you think?
I think it is something they need to explore. You know, I think the Rock's position on the board is something they need to explore. I think the long-standing relationship between Seth and Roman is something that they'll need to dig into. It almost feels like they have so much that they've thrown up into the air that they're running out of time to process it all in a way that's rewarding for the audience. So at this point, it's almost like they got to pick like one or two of these things and spend the next few weeks really hammering them home as being the lever that this story rests on. You know, is it The Rock using his influence on the board to take certain liberties? Is it the relationship between Rock and Roman and how, you know, there actually is some professional jealousy on the part of Roman or perhaps The Rock, about Roman finding all this success after his departure from WWE and moving on to Hollywood? You know, there's all those things that they really, you know, they've kind of teased you with over the last couple of weeks and these interactions, you know, going back, I guess, closer to a month with when The Rock started appearing on television regularly, that they've just kind of thrown out there and let the audience kind of chew on, and then they haven't followed up on yet. And so I really do hope they get there. I just don't know if they have enough time to get to all of it. So maybe just pick one or two and really hammer it home.
Yeah, the next 2 weeks are going to be interesting. There's a lot to do. And, you know, Rock's out there every week. Roman's out there every week. Cody and Seth are available whenever they want them. I'm curious how they round this all out. But, I mean, Jason, they put some balls in the air, you know. Can Seth be trusted? Can Rock be trusted? And it is a big tag match, and you don't really know what the Roman-Cody match is going to be until that tag match takes place, storyline-wise, and they're letting people know things can happen. As for, like, that's fine. Jason, back to you.
No, I agree. I love that they've got all these – they've thrown up all these ideas in the air, and we can go either way with them, and I think that's a great way to tell your story because you want fans going in thinking that this could happen, that could happen, or that could happen. because that's what wrestling's all about. I mean, a lot of times when I was wrestling fans, it's more the anticipation leading up to the match than rather the match itself that gets us excited. It's all of us fantasy thinking what's going to happen, which makes wrestling exciting. In relation to what Joe brought up about the women's division, I understand what he's saying, but I don't think he was saying, like, to get rid of it completely. I think what he's trying to say is if you're not going to do it right, then why are you not doing it at all? But to sort of counter that point...
Or if you're
not
doing it right, will people miss it?
Well, you know what, Wade? Forget about whether people would miss it or not. Without women's... Let's be honest, right? I don't know how you measure this, but I can just imagine when you're selling advertising or you're selling network rights, the fact you've got well-presented, strong women on your show, that's going to attract more sponsors and more attention in a good way to your business yeah. than if you didn't have them, especially with what we found out about Vince and the way that he treats women. Could you imagine if women weren't yeah. featured prominently on this show? I mean, the fact that they've got women in this position, you definitely want them there. And I don't know how you measure it, but it definitely has made WWE more palatable and acceptable to certain sponsors along the way to have these well-presented, strong women and say that we've got, you know, we've got young girls that look up to Bianca Belair or Rhea Ripley and all the rest of it and what they're doing on social media. Make no mistake about it. Yeah. You can never get rid of the women, and I wouldn't get rid of the women strictly from a business point of view. And then, you know, the other point you have to raise is that regarding the ratings you're talking about, Netflix is going to be interesting because, I mean, it always annoys me when, and I say this like in a playful way, but when you talk about the ratings, you're always talking about like an American audience, right? I'd love to get the worldwide right. figures because now with Netflix, that's going to be a new metric. How many people
that's
are watching point. Worldwide yeah. Raw on the streaming, right, Wade? And the other thing is oh. that with Netflix, as the international, as it moves on, I believe the deal is that when international markets come up for grabs, Netflix is going to get those too, like here in Australia. So
right.
it's going to be very interesting yep. to be getting the ratings from a worldwide point of view.
Well, we'll see what kind of rating system is in place and what evolves. I will say, you know, obviously the reason, there's multiple reasons we focus on U.S.-based ratings. Inertia, we've been doing it since before WWE was more international. So we have comparison points. Two, the comparison point year to year, it's a sample that shows the ebb and flow of popularity. I doubt there's a real big difference in terms of the ebb and flow. If a product is hot and it's growing in the U.S. or receding in the U.S., it's reflective of probably the quality of the product worldwide. And also, there's an availability issue. It's just those numbers are available to us in a prompt way. And also, in terms of the revenue that's gained, it is still the by far and away the number one source of revenue for them. Netflix is changing that in the sense that it's sort of an international buy. But, you know, USA Network and Fox – that's this huge windfall of revenue, and each renewal, it's traditionally been a broadcast or cable network in the U.S., and so you want to track where is the most of the money going to come from. But it is changing. You know, I mean, it very much is an international brand in a way that feels, you know, very different than, you know, 25 years ago when I was, you know, still covering this. So, I hope we have a good way to monitor and track how things are going on Netflix relative to, you know, somewhere in the range of what we're seeing now, but I'm not banking on that. Jason, anything else?
And the other, well, just one more question, just regarding Raw. I get, yeah. And we talk about women's wrestling. You know, without that third hour of Raw that was introduced 11 years ago, would we have ever seen this so-called women's, you know, revolution? Because you had that extra hour, you had to fill it in and you had to get more wrestling on and you have to promote more women. I mean, it's an interesting question to me. Without the third hour, do we have women's wrestling like it is today? Could we always complain about the third hour? Could that be one of the major mm-hmm. positives that we've got to see more women's wrestling?
I'll say this. There's nothing about having 4 hours of TV a week instead of five that would have precluded them from featuring women. I mean, you know, AEW does it, and, you know, people think they should do it more, and they could do it more, but they have less of a strong division. So if they were committed to it, they could have. Jake, what do you think? Do you think that third hour has been instrumental in giving women more time than they just practically would than Vince McMahon would have found practical to give them in a tighter two-hour format?
I think it's plausible, just given when they were initially beginning the, what they had termed the evolution, and maybe just prior to that, there was maybe one or two women's segments on the show, and then they were typically in the orbit of some of the male talents. You know, there wasn't so much of a dedicated women's division. It was more of an ornament at that point than something they took seriously and presented as such. And, I think there was fan demand for it that caught the company off guard. You know, they even credit some of the online, hashtags and things as turning around some people's opinions in the company about how marketable and profitable women's wrestling could be. And I think there's other, the class of women that came out of NXT that brought something new to the table in terms of in-ring quality certainly had a part, a part of that. But having more time, I think, benefited them. But I think it's in conjunction with a number of other factors, too.
Jason, anything else you want to talk about before we wrap up here?
Yeah, I agree with what Jake's saying. And just in relation to, women's wrestling, I've always felt like this is the key to it, is having it on your show just from a purely business point of view. Because, some people criticize women wrestling and they say it's not as good as the men. And you want to see good women's wrestling, just like we want to see good wrestling full stop. But just having the women there, just from a pure business point of view, to make your product more attractive to sponsors and sort of take the edge of what professional wrestling has always been seen to be. I know you can't measure that weight, but to me it's just an interesting thought process to think about how much more palatable WWE as a company has become to potential sponsors mm-hmm. and advertisers and whatnot and networks because we have women's wrestling and we've got strong, well-presented women. I think what women have done and having that on there, I think has just been an overall bonus on top of like John Cena and what he's done. But you combine the two, I think this is what's helped WWE, enter the mainstream and have sort of that negativity associated with it sort of go mm-hmm. away. And even with what we've seen with Vince McMahon, it seems like sort of pushed that to the side and it's not really hurting that much. And I think it's by having the number of women that they can point to and say, okay, well, maybe it's just that one guy and it's not a whole industry-wide thing. I think it's really helped. Really helped.
Yeah. I think those are good points. Anything
right.
else about tonight's
That's
show
it,
or anything
Appreciate
else, Jason, before we
just in relation to Jade Cargill, let's be honest, right? She looks like $1 million. It's like having a Ferrari. No point having a Ferrari is that when you start the car, it conks out 2 miles in. You want to make sure that this Ferrari is going really well from the moment you start it. So whatever they're doing with her, the last thing you want is to present her in a way and she doesn't come across well or something bad happens or whatever. And remember, Triple H said a while ago, we've got our playbook, everyone else has theirs. Once she adapts to the playbook and they feel comfortable, they want to make sure every post is a winner with her. So if that means it takes a bit longer, so be it. Because you cannot afford to get this wrong with her. You've got to get it right from the outset.
I totally agree. Thanks, Jason. Well, I'll talk to you soon, I'm sure. Yep, you bet. All right, Jake, let's wrap up with a couple emails here. Zach in Texas normally emails about AEW. He goes, I typically don't watch SmackDown, but I wanted to see this Cody-Roman face-off. In my view, Cody and Roman had one job, make their title match feel as important as a tag match, which right now feels like a much bigger deal. On that count, they failed miserably. They spent the first half of the promo talking about the tag match, and then Roman absolutely flamed Cody for coming across like a politician, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Cody didn't have a real answer, so he came up with some lame line about destiny. The final image was Team Cody staring down the bloodline. How does it build up Cody finishing the story? Why should fans care about that when they've basically been told the Night 1 main event is the real main event? So I want to, Roman saying Cody seems like a politician. To me, I think the intended framing of that is Roman looks at somebody being genuine and caring about the fans and actually liking shaking hands and liking taking pictures and liking signing autographs and bringing smiles to people's faces. And Roman's character can't relate to that. And we saw him as a babyface. He couldn't relate to it. It's not something he wanted to engage in. And so to me, it's not like calling out Cody for something inauthentic about himself, like a politician who, just wants to get elected for ego, but doesn't believe what they're pitching policy wise, or that they don't care about the people. They just want the fame and the power. I think when Roman says it, it doesn't ring true because people think Cody's authentic, and that's why the line isn't going to harm him. And I think it plays into Roman being a heel because he can't understand somebody doing something that doesn't involve asserting power or you know, doing whatever it takes, including cheating, to retain power. So I guess I don't see as Zach did and as was brought up earlier as a negative. Jake, what do you think about my more charitable framing of it, but one I believe in?
You know, I think it works on that level, and I think, you know, it also works on the level of saying, okay, you are taking information that I just, you know, threw out there, and you're spinning it, and you're acting like a politician in the sense that, you know, anything I say, you don't directly answer, you just evade and twist and spin and that kind of thing. And I think it was intended to be somewhat of an indictment of Cody, but on the level of, you know, what you discussed in the sense that, you know, Roman just does not understand how anybody can act the way that Cody does.
Yeah.
And if anything, I wish Cody had the response that you just laid out rather than just changing the subject and moving on to something else. Because I think you earn points with people by talking about how much you actually enjoy the things that the heel is accusing you of. You know, I absolutely want to have your children participate in my entrance and sign autographs and, you know, be a part of this community that is, you know, in the audience with us. And I think that's where Cody may, you know, and that might've been for the interest of time or whatever the case may be. But I think, you know, they have to have a more effective response for Cody in that scenario.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. That what I brought up would have been fruitful for Cody to bring up at the point. Maybe he'll have another chance. Okay, we'll go to what's on in St. Louis. Does it seem that the pride group of Lashley and the Profits has been a waste for Lashley over the past 8 months? He could have had some big matches on SmackDown, but he seemed to be relegated to the back burner for Triple H Creative. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know what to make of what's going on. He's got this weird new suit this week. I don't know if weird's a word. Distinctive and memorable. He's smiling. The faction has been all over the place, and I don't think fans have any idea what they're supposed to think about them at this point. You know, could Lashley have been having big matches? Sure. I mean, he's getting up there in age, and, you know, every year that goes by is a lost opportunity. But he also hasn't, you know, taken a bunch of bumps and gotten injured, and in a way maybe he's fresher, and, you know, whatever they, you know, maybe they have something in mind for him post-WrestleMania. It's been, you know, a pretty busy top tier on Raw and SmackDown. Do you have any sense of what's going on with him and that faction? And do you think WWE's reacted to crowd reactions the right way in how things have been kind of thrown at them?
You know, I really don't know what's going on with that faction because they haven't made it clear in any way. You know, you're just watching all of them sort of flail about. You know, they seem like at one time they were going to turn them heel, and then when they didn't get the reaction they were hoping for, they kind of abandoned it, and they've slowly just reverted back to being baby faces. You know, tonight they were using their old music again and you know, playing for the crowd response. You know, they moved him into this feud with the Final Testament, and nobody really knows what that group is about either. And so you have two really ill-defined factions, you know, who the crowd vaguely knows which one they're supposed to support and which one they're not, but their intentions and their motivations are not clearly defined. I hope they get them back on track after WrestleMania, but it seems like a lost cause to try to do it before then. And, you know, if my inclination is true about the tag match and the potential for those titles to get split by having two teams, you know, pull down the independent titles for their respective brands, then maybe you can shift the focus to a more autonomous tag division and get them more actively participating in television. But the Street Profits, Lashley, AOP, Karrion Kross, the whole thing just feels like a jumble of a mess right now.
Zahn also says in the past year, some some post shows said Austin Theory was seen as a higher priority than Grayson on SmackDown. Now Austin Theory is playing dumb sidekick to Grayson. He does not seem like the guy who beat John Cena a year ago. Well, that was such a fluke, or, you know, tainted win. But I still think Austin Theory is a better athlete, better wrestler. I mean, Grayson was bumping early for punches. I mean, he was showing light. Grayson is a valuable personality. But from a upside standpoint, Waller has a little more spring in his step, a little more confidence. He's got more range and depth to, you know, his character than Austin Theory. I don't think by a mile, but I think he's a more kind of polished act, and I can see why Austin, who's younger, is subservient to him in a way at this stage. But, I mean, if I'm buying stock, I'm still buying stock in Austin Theory, even over the next, you know, 5 years, much less 10. You know, there's still, I mean, he's taken better bumps. His timing is better. You know, I just think he still has more upside. I mean, there's no guarantees and all that, but I mean, you know, I think Waller and Austin Theory are going to end up in different places 5 years from now. I think Austin is somebody who's going to end up having more serious matches at some point, and Grayson Waller is going to be an iconic talker, agitator, you know, kind of mid-card guy. Jake, anything, you disagree with any of that, or anything ring not true, or what do you think about that dynamic?
No, I think that's probably an accurate statement. I, you know, Austin Theory still has a lot of growth to undertake over the next couple of years. You know, it seems like there's still something missing on the promo side of things, particularly. You know, he doesn't seem to have a lot of clarity about who he is as a character, other than just being obnoxious. And I think that's really the key for getting to the next level, is just finding out where you fit into the overall scheme of things as a character. And I don't think they've really found that with him yet. Waller, I think, you know, is further along. You know, he seems to have a better sense of his own identity. You know,
he's more of a finished product of what he's going to be in theory, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and I don't think, you know, I think the ceiling is still higher for Theory. He's more naturally gifted athletically. You know, he's got a better look, you know, and so he's got all those things going for him. You know, arguably the personality aspect of working in WWE is the hardest thing for anybody to nail down. And so, I mean, I think with enough time and patience, they'll get there with Theory, but I don't know if it's 2 years from now or 4 years from now or whatever the case may be, but he's still a very young man, so he's got plenty of time.
Yeah. Anything else, Jake, you want to bring up about tonight's show before we sign off?
No, I think we've beaten it to death at this point.
All right, very good. I like to think of it as we have had a sufficient amount of pertinent analysis.
Fair enough.
Yes. If we did another 20 minutes, maybe beating it to death. Cool. Thanks, Jake, so much. Check out his work at ProWrestling.net. Thanks, everybody, for your support. Jake, we'll talk to you soon, probably after WrestleMania at this point.
All right. Thanks, Wayne. Take care.
Have a
great night.
Have a good weekend. Yep.